Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Audrey McGuckin Leadership Podcast. This podcast is dedicated to providing helpful insights from some of the industry's best and most respected leaders in the human capital space. I'm your host, Audrey McGuckin, CEO of Audrey McGuckin Talent Solutions, and today I'm thrilled that we're joined again by John Gleeson, president of A Better View. Now, John and I had a great conversation on our last podcast about design thinking and how this can be applied to the human capital space. And at the end of that podcast, we promised you that we would unpack the five principles of design thinking. And so today, I'm thrilled that, again, John is on the podcast with us, and we are going to talk to you about the first principle, which is empathy. Now, we touched on that a little bit in the last podcast, but this is an opportunity to have a deeper dive. So John, you have spent the last, you had 20 plus years at Procter & Gamble and the last 12 years running your own advisory firm. We are thrilled to have you on the show again and love if you could share some of your perspective on this first principle, which is empathy.
I'd love to, Audrey. Thank you for the opportunity to share some of my perspective and experiences with your listeners. The first principle of design thinking, as Audrey mentioned, is empathy. And it's in its first, in my own opinion and experience, as well as most important of all the principles, because it really gets at who it is you're trying to solve or create for. In the context of product design or service design, this might be a consumer. In the case of B2B businesses, this might be a customer or a business partner. And in the case of human capital, it could be an employee or a team or a site, if you will, or a function. And part of this really is... And part of the principles around design thinking, we'll talk a little bit more about this as we unpack each of the other principles, is that this notion of whatever it is we're trying to create, whatever problem we're trying to solve, we really won't know what that problem is or how best to solve it unless we know and understand the users or the individuals, the humans involved in this process or program. And that's at the heart of trying to uncover what problem. We'll talk about this in other principles as we unpack this, as well as how to go solve for it. And so I think the opportunity is walking in the shoes of these people. It's not surmising or speculating what they might be thinking or feeling. It's getting in and doing the research and getting in and understanding how they feel, why they feel that way, and how it applies not only to their work in the case of human capital solutions, but their life. And so many times we think of product solutions or employee programs as something that is developed by a central hub and then pushed out to everybody, and oh, they're going to love it. Well, how many times have you as human capital leaders put a policy or a program in place that didn't get rave positive reactions from it? And some of that could have been a function of developing something at a central core and pushing it out without fully understanding, is that inspiring to somebody? Is it frustrating to somebody? Are you solving a real problem of theirs?
I was loving how you were really, it's this invitation to stay in the moment longer than you might to gain an understanding of who you're trying to serve. And I think, you know, a lot of the human capital leaders that I have spent time with and a lot of our clients, that their biggest challenge is tactical driving out the strategic, or the urgent driving out the strategic, which means that, you know, there's this fast-paced having to get things done, and there's a lot that needs to be done. I can see how organizations might move through this principle too quickly.
Or skip it entirely, yes.
Yeah, For sure. Now, I'd love if you could, John, share with us, how can organizations get really leveraging this empathy principle? What are some of the ways that you've seen other organizations doing this, or things that you've done with other organizations?
So one of the things, Audrey, that you just touched on is this notion of urgent versus important. And when the phone rings or an email drops into my inbox, I feel compelled to act on those things, but they may not be important to the enterprise or important to the work or important to the things I need to deliver. And so part of it is you've touched on it, this balance between feeling the need to be productive and moving things along in the enterprise, and literally just taking the time to be able to do it right. So I see a lot of people, if I think about design thinking in the context of product design or consumer promotions, I see an awful lot of people that jump to the solution stage without really thinking about who is it that I need to, that I'm serving, or what problem I'm trying to solve, which actually is the second principle of design thinking, which we'll touch on later. But this balance is fight the urge to solve too soon, is one of the pieces of advice that I'll give to people, whether they're looking at employee solutions, leadership development solutions, or product and service design. And some of the tools, to kind of build on your thought, some of the tools people use are journey maps or empathy maps or stakeholder maps, in trying to understand who are all the people that feel like they're going to have a vote on how this program or how this product comes to life. And how deeply do we go into understanding those things? Because there's, in a human capital world, certainly there are regulatory things, there are time and productivity things, there's culture. What are the cultural norms inside the enterprise? There's leadership above me, there's talent teams and execution and implementation teams that are parallel to me or below me. And all of those people are going to feel like they have a vote. And part of really getting in and understanding the empathy side of this is what is important to each of those pools of stakeholders, and it's observing. So one of the things that I'll share, Audrey, as things to consider are sharing some examples of things to consider not doing. So one of the things that we saw and learned at Procter & Gamble was the use of focus groups, which had always been and still is a very popular way of trying to get user or consumer input for products or programs that we might have considered. The challenge with focus groups is it often doesn't really get at what's the real frustration of the consumer, because the process of focus groups often led by a series of questions that we as the manufacturer have think, oh, we want to go explore this and we want to ask about that. The other dynamic that occurs is there are personalities in the room. Some are strong personalities that want to make sure their voice is heard, and others who are there for their $75 and a couple of pieces of pizza, and they really don't care if their voice is heard. And the challenge becomes, are you using the right form of research? Are you using the right form of discovery to uncover that real empathy and get at the emotional needs? And one of the reasons, as you and I have talked offline in the past, that I believe design thinking is an amazing, there's an amazing opportunity to leverage design thinking in the human capital space. A lot of times in large organizations, human resources becomes the implementer of policies and mission and passion. And is there an opportunity to kind of flip the switch, to pivot, to help enable the human capital world to be that source of inspiration, to be that source of pride, and I want to be a part of driving it forward. And that's the, I think, the magic in where design thinking can help the human capital space. Make solutions innately human-centered.
Yeah, and I do think the there's a couple of huge areas in the human capital space where This is such a high impact approach, you know, particularly in the engagement space, in the culture space, or leadership development. So those are certainly some of the things that come to mind for me. But just let's go to the dark side just for a minute, if we may. What are some of the mistakes that you've seen people do at this first principle stage of empathy? And could you share that with some of our listeners, John?
Well, I think, Audrey, the most common mistake, if you want to call it that, but it's more about the most popular tendency in human or corporate behavior, is somebody to say, I already know everything I need to know about the group I'm trying to solve for. I can't tell you how many times I saw at Procter & Gamble in my time at P&G, or at any other large corporation that I've had the blessing and luxury to serve in the last 12 years, where people are sitting in saying, oh, we don't have the time or the money to go do that discovery work. I already know enough about this consumer. Let's go do this program. We're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to do this. And most of those solutions are built around what has been done in the past, which may or may not have had a success story, and maybe what the company is capable of performing because it's easy. Oh, we already know how to do this. We already know how to manufacture that. We already know how to do a coupon or a promotion or an employee trend survey. We know how to do those things. And so part of it is, and I can map some of those similar things into the human capital space, thinking about programs or policies or inspiration opportunities. I can't tell you how many organizations that I've come into, not only P&G, but P&G included, where somebody says, oh, you know, our team doesn't seem to be working well together, so let's create a fun committee. But the fun committee usually is about meeting at a bar after hours. So you're asking the employee to stay longer, and you're presuming that fun has to include alcohol. And part of it is, well, if you don't think they're getting along well, have you watched them? What's happening? Is it one toxic individual in the organization? Is it a set of programs or policies? Is it that they're not aligned to a common set of goals? And that's where the empathy side of this can occur. And it doesn't have to be an extensive set of interviews. It could be somebody that has the ability to remove themselves from bias, which can be difficult in and of itself, but just watching a team interact, watching who feels the need to say something all the time, who's not saying anything for a myriad of reasons, and then really peeling that back to understand, you know, why do you have to feel like you need to be heard, and why does this other person not say anything? It's not necessarily that they're innately introverted. It may be they feel like their voice hasn't, they've checked out.
Presumptions and assumptions, and just being able to suspend those long enough to stay in that space. Well, John, we of course could talk much longer.
We certainly could.
I really appreciate you sharing your perspective. For our listeners, John and I are actually hosting an innovation lab in January. It's going to be on the 10th of January here in St. Petersburg in Florida. And in that session, you know, John talked about journey maps, empathy maps, and stakeholder maps. And one of the things that we'll be doing with our participants is really teaching them how to go about those maps. And so if this is something that's of interest to you, please email me at audrey@audreymcguckin.com. We'd love to have you join us. So thank you again for listening to this episode of the Audrey McGuckin Leadership Podcast. Look for the next episode, which will be the second principle, which is define, and more about that in the next session with John. To learn more about the work we do in the human capital space, visit us at www.audreymcguckin.com, or to learn more about the work John Gleason does, you can reach him directly through his email at johnmgleason1@gmail.com. Our next podcast in this series is going to be in the next week, so please join us then, and thank you.